As we've seen on this show, all kinds of people can find success. Did you know that 34% of tech professionals don't have a bachelor's degree? Skills First Hiring isn't just inclusive, it is the smart strategy to expand your tech talent pipeline. And finding the right tech talent isn't just hard, it's mission critical. And yet many enterprise employers still rely on outdated methods or platforms that just don't deliver. In today's market, hiring tech professionals isn't just about filling roles, it's about outpacing competitors. But with niche skills, hybrid preferences, and high salary expectations, it's never been more challenging to cut through the noise and connect with the right people. And that's where Indeed comes in. Indeed isn't just a job board, it is your tech hiring partner. As a number one site where tech talent applies to jobs, Indeed gives you direct access to over 3 million U.S. tech professionals, 86% of whom have applied through the platform. So post your first job and get $75 off at Indeed.com/tech talent. That's Indeed.com/tech talent to claim this offer. Indeed, built for what's now and what's next in tech hiring.
Every day you do experiments and they fail, and you just have to get used to that failure. I always get quite excited the more failure there is, because you realize it's a difficult problem to solve. So if you manage to solve something that other people can't solve, then it's quite a strong pattern.
Hey everyone, I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at Entrepreneur.com, and welcome to How Success Happens. So, you know, on this show, we often speak with great inventors who are inspired to create a revolutionary product because something in their life sucked. Well, today's guest was spurred into action because something didn't suck enough. Sir James Dyson is the creator of a Dyson vacuum cleaners and a whole lot more. And I'm thrilled to have him on here today to talk about following a spark of inspiration that leads to founding a company that changes the consumer landscape and makes billions of dollars in the process. So I am so excited to learn a little bit more about how his brain works. Welcome, Sir James.
Good morning, Dan. Very nice to be on your show.
Great to speak with you. I remember those first Dyson commercials very fondly when you came on our TVs and you told us all that vacuum cleaner you have stinks. This one's better. So I remember those days well. I wonder if we could start. So business ideas, that is by far the most searched term on my website, entrepreneur.com. Mm. So as a person who has come up with your fair share of good and great ideas, can you talk a little bit about that process and finding inspiration?
Well, I always find that inspiration comes from being angry about something. Something doesn't work properly, or something doesn't do what it should, or something breaks, or whatever it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong in a little bit of anger about something. And we all have it and sort of forget about it, but it tends to linger with me, operating as an engineer. So I want to know why it's like that, and is there a way around it? Is there a way we can get rid of that problem? So that's how it starts. And if you like, it starts from a negative, sorting something out that needs sorting out.
So,
and of course, in my case, it's product and technology focused.
Right.
A lot of other people, it's something else altogether, something to do with the service industry or whatever. So I can only really talk about products and technology and how I develop that to solve problems.
So basically what you're telling me is, don't grit your teeth and bear it. Fix it. Be annoyed.
Yes, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
don't stop breaking things or anything like that. But I mean, it sets the sort of an anger. Not anger is the wrong word. It drives you to solve it. It's the motivation. Because if I feel that, other people will feel that. So.
Right. Excellent. So. With the vacuum cleaner, My understanding is you had the idea, you sketched it out, it was perfect, you nailed it, and off to the races, right? There was no iterations,
no,
you just did
no,
it.
No, nothing
once.
Like that at all, nothing like that at all. No, I had the idea obliquely, actually, because we had to install a cyclone in a factory I had spraying powder paint onto frames for the wheel barrier I was making. And we had originally had a cloth filter which clogged. And then we learned that the type of thing that didn't clog was this thing called an industrial cyclone. So over 2 weekends, we built one. It was 30 foot high. We copied one we saw in a local lumber yard. And amazingly, it worked. It collected this very fine powder all day long without clogging. Now, I had been made to vacuum when I was a child from the age of about 7 because my father died, and so I had to help with housework. And I remember this sort of cloth bag on an upright machine, I won't mention the manufacturer, that stank. It always stank of stale dog and stale dust. It screamed and it didn't pick things up. So here I am, you know, 20 years later, I've got my own house and a young family and so on. And I went out and bought the most powerful vacuum cleaner you could buy, so it said. And I'm finding the same experience, exactly the same experience I had when I was young. So it said the bag was full. So I couldn't find a new bag. So I tipped the dirt out of the bag into the garbage can and then gaffer taped it back together again, put it in the machine. Still no suction. Look, I said, wait a minute, the bag's empty. Why is there no suction? So I opened the bag and looked inside and I saw this fine layer of fine dust all around the inside of the bag. And I suddenly twigged as to how a vacuum cleaner worked. You create airflow, which goes through the bag. And the bag is not a collection device, it's a filter. And the filter is being clogged. I mean, I hadn't really thought about how a vacuum cleaner worked, like, you know, like everybody else. I just used it and hated it. But suddenly I discovered that there's a big problem with a vacuum cleaner. You know, the very first dust that goes into it goes straight to the little hole pores in the paper bag and blocks them. And the light goes to red, bag full indicator. It's not a bag full indicator, it's a bag clogged indicator. So there's this annoyance and sort of anger. You know, I bought the most powerful one I could buy and it's not picking things up off the floor. So, and then just by coincidence, about the same time, we had the same problem at our factory with this fine powder spraying onto the frames, and we built this cyclone. So as I was building and welding this 30-foot high cyclone, why don't vacuum cleaners have this marvelous thing? So I rushed home and with cardboard and gaffer tape and a bit of hose, I replaced the stinking bag on the back of my upright vacuum cleaner with this cardboard and hose cyclone and pushed it around. And we had a retriever dog, so lots of dog hairs and all the usual, and three children mess in the house. And it appeared to work. So I thought, this is a good thing to do. So I started developing it. I mean, actually, What then happened, to answer your original point, was I had to build 5,127 prototypes over a period of about 4 years to actually make it work. So
that's incredible. So, you know, I think sometimes an idea hits us and we think, this is so obvious, someone else must be doing this, and we just drop it. But it sounds like you didn't drop it.
No, I mean, I was lucky because when I went to find my patent, I saw that people had the idea of using a cyclone in a vacuum cleaner before. I wasn't unique in that, but theirs hadn't worked. I didn't know other people had done that, but that almost every invention, when you go there, someone's had a go at it. In fact, there was a famous controller of the US Patent Office who said in 1901, everything that's going to be invented has been invented. So there's no need for the US Patent Office any longer. So it's often slightly worrying as an inventor where you have an original idea and you discover someone else had the same idea but couldn't make it work. So it's frustrating, but no, I made it work. I mean, that's the difference.
Yeah, well, I think that's a huge difference, which is the difference between having an idea and the drive to actually do it, and the drive to go through more than 5,000 iterations of it. That's the big difference maker, right?
And if I can give some encouragement to would-be inventors, I enjoyed every minute of those 5,127 prototypes because I was learning all the time. You know, that didn't work. This did work. You know, how can I make that better? Is this a good route to follow or not? So it was a lovely, it was an intellectual, it sounds tedious building all these prototypes, but it's fun actually. I enjoyed it. You're in pursuit of something and you want to get it. You want to sort it.
Well, that leads me to my next question, which you just basically just answered there for yourself. But, you know, frustration, coming up against a brick wall, you can't figure this thing out. Is there anything, is it just innate to you, or is there anything you tell yourself when you're getting frustrated that kind of pushes you along and makes you not drop it?
I used to be a long-distance runner, and I still am a long-distance runner. And so I'm in it for the long haul.
Okay.
Once you've started and you're working on it, you want to make it work. And you just have every day you do experiments and they fail, and you just have to get used to that failure. And I always get quite excited the more failure there is, because you realize it's a difficult problem to solve. And when you do solve it, you'll get quite a good patent, quite good intellectual property protection, because it was a difficult thing to solve. It wasn't obvious. Because you can't get a patent if what you did was obvious to one skilled in the art. That's what the description is. So if you manage to solve something that other people can't solve, then it's quite a strong patent in theory.
And your passion for problem solving goes beyond all of the things that you've worked on. I wanted to talk about the James Dyson Award. Can you talk a little bit about what inspired you to do that and what you are seeing from people who submit ideas and products for this award? What do you think of the new crop of inventors out there?
Well, very inspirational and wonderful. And these are people who are actually doing something to solve the problem rather than talk about it and be a mouthpiece. These people are actually doing something about it. And very interestingly, there have been design awards in the past and maybe engineering awards, but no one's ever done an award for people who solve problems. And we've been doing it for almost 30 years now. And in the very early days, people used to come along with windsurfers and skateboards and things like that. We don't get that any longer at all. And that's the really interesting thing. And they fall into two categories. One, medical things. I mean, not necessarily medical in the sense that they're deeply technical medical, but medical to solve problems, solve diseases, discover breast cancer, all sorts of things like that. Very, very wonderful things. Or environmental projects. So they form into two categories. We don't get the sort of leisure, I want a better speedboat or thing aquafoiled so that I can go along in the sea. We don't get any of that at all. These are people who want to solve real today's problems, Alzheimer's, whatever it is, they want to solve them. Often for old people. And these are young students wanting to solve problems that old people have and disabled people have. So it's really encouraging. The spheres they're choosing to invent in, but also their cleverness, their brilliance is extraordinary. I mean, there's one, for example, there was a Philippine student who noticed there's a lot of rotting fruit in the Philippines because of hurricanes and things like that, adverse weather conditions. So he found a mixture of fruit that you could paint on a window and it would create electricity. So he had a sort of normal size window pane and he was charging his iPad from it.
Wow. That's incredible.
That's just one example I've given you, but there's lots and lots of those.
Yeah.
There was a wonderful American student who developed a cycle helmet. Did you know those Christmas decorations that you fold out from flat to make a sort of ball? It was
right.
A bit like that. So you could get it out of a slot machine or have it in your handbag, and then you pulled it over your head, and it formed a very, very good cycle helmet.
Wow.
So there's sort of every extreme from very technical to very, very practical.
Wow. I immediately want both of those things. Well, that's such an incredible thing about when you see an invention, something that, you know, I would have never in a million years even thought about that. But as soon as you said that thing about the helmet, anyone who's been on a bike, now you got to like carry this stupid helmet around all day.
Yeah.
Immediately you're like, yes, that is an incredible idea. So it's amazing. Now, did you create these awards just so you would have a front seat to see all this cool stuff people were coming up with?
Well, that would be a very good reason for it, yes. But yeah. No, we did it to encourage, and we get, tens of thousands of entries. And we do it in about 30 countries. We did it to encourage people, in this case, at universities. We do work in schools as well, because there's a very interesting thing happens in schools. But this is to encourage people at universities to do serious inventions. We give them a prize, which enables them to carry on and hopefully put it into production or find someone to manufacture it for them. But we're not doing it for commercial reasons. So we deliberately don't take a stake in it or finance them. But hopefully we're giving them publicity so that other people will pick it up. So we don't want to profit from it in any way.
That's a brilliant idea. I'll give you $10 for it, and I'm going to have 90% of the equity in the company. That's not your style.
That's exactly the kind of thing we wanted to avoid. I hope we give them publicity. I hope we attract other investors to them, and we give them money to enable them to go on and do more work on it. We have a country winner, and then we have two world winners.
Oh, okay.
There are two levels of publicity, if you like. So there are like 60 country winners and then two world winners. It's a bit like the Miss World contest.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to
start. Well, it's not like the Miss World contest at all. That was a stupid thing.
Well, I'm going to start thinking cause I want that. I want that award. Can you tell us a little bit? I'm intrigued about your farm. Why? What spurred that? What spurred your interest in that? Designers, you make these products, these electronic products. I'm just curious where the interest in it came from, and what's your hope with the James Dyson Farm?
Well, I grew up in the country and worked on my friends' farms, other people's farms, so. Farming isn't exactly in my blood, but it's in me. So when I was able to, I wanted to buy farms and do farming because I believe in it. I believe in growing food. It's a bit like manufacturing. You're manufacturing food.
Right.
And I wondered if we could use technology to improve it. And we started to do that with our strawberry growing venture, where we have anaerobic digesters that mulch down crops, create gas, drive generators. And we feed that electricity into the grid for 10,000, 20,000 homes. So that's green electricity. You get 60% electricity out of the generator and 40% waste heat. And we'll be using the waste heat to dry grain, which is a perfectly good thing to do. So you get free grain drying. But we still had a lot more waste heat that we weren't using. So we thought, let's put it into a massive greenhouse and grow strawberries. So we get all year round. So you don't have to fly in strawberries. We can provide strawberries all year round. And they're delicious, by the way.
Well, I was just going to ask, how are they?
No, they're absolutely delicious. And
wow.
And because they're in a very controlled environment, you don't get aphids and all that sort of thing. It's all robotic. We're even picking them mostly robotically now. We develop robots to do that. And in fact, it's been so successful, we've doubled the size of it. And now we're talking about increasing the size again. So we've got about 32 acres of glass house.
Wow.
It's not quite vertical farming. That's the next stage. We're developing that as well, so that we can get nearly three times the number of plants in the same space using the same heat. We have drones flying over the fields with a software program we've developed, and the drone can see where you need fertilizer and where you don't. It can see where the weeds are, and it can see where the marsh harrow is nesting. And then the tractors are not driven. They're driven by a card that we put in them. And we have beacons and GPS. So it can go along and it will only put fertilizer where you need it and only put weed killer where you need it. And it'll avoid the marsh harrier's nesting point. So that, you know, we're trying to apply technology to farming to make it more efficient, to make it better, to produce better food and so on. And it, we're very lucky to be able to invest in farming because most farmers operate on such small margins, they can't afford to invest. So if you like, we're doing research that they're not able to do. So, and we share it all. We share it all on our website. So it's just, you know, trying to improve farming, trying to grow things locally so they're not imported and to make us food secure and have better food.
So it's just this like side hobby of yours, you know, just a fun little thing that you don't put much thought into. That's what I'm picking up.
Something like that, yes. Yeah, no, our engineers are involved in. Of course, I'm 98% full time on the other business, but we've got a very good team of farmers, and we're trying to do this out, and we're trying to do things better, and trying to help farming in general, in a very small way.
On behalf of every person who eats food, thank you. We appreciate the efforts for sure. I'm sure you must get asked a lot of questions from, you know, whether it's people who are applying for the awards or students or young inventors. Like, what are the most common questions that you get asked a lot? And maybe you can answer it here once and for all, and then they'll never ask you again.
Well, the first thing is I never give advice. Mm. And that's not because I'm mean. It's because every person is in a different situation. And I don't really want to talk about people who start businesses for business sake, you know, or people who do service business, all that sort of thing. So people who want to do products. The only thing I would say is that you've got to bounce back from disasters. You've got to experiment, and if you experiment, you'll get failures, and you've got to bounce back from the failures. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is just to believe in yourself and not listen to anybody else, because you'll get all sorts of people telling you that won't work, all sorts of experts saying you can't do that. And the public, in the form of focus groups and market research, will tell you they don't want that or you can't do that. So you've just got to believe in yourself and ignore everybody else.
Is there, can you think back over the course of your career of some advice that you were given that you ignored and you're happy you ignored?
Yes. Yeah, one very good example, a very graphic example, actually. As you know, with a Dyson, you see the dirt. And when I went to try and sell this to retailers, they said, you can't sell that thing where you see the dirt. I mean, A, it'll look disgusting in the shop, and B, nobody wants to see the dirt. So we did some very crude, we didn't have much money, so we did some very crude market research, and they were absolutely right. No one wanted to see the dirt. But we as engineers had really enjoyed seeing the dirt, seeing it spin round and seeing it collecting. Yeah. The satisfaction you get as you use it. So we thought, I'm sorry, but you know, everybody's telling us we're wrong. We're just going to ignore everybody. And we sold it with this clear bin. So, you know, sometimes you just have to trust in your own star, what you believe.
And yeah.
To some extent, if you're doing something new, people want to be surprised and shocked. And how they think now is absolutely not how they're going to think in the future. The future is going to be different. So you can afford to be different.
I love that. That's fantastic. What are some of the new products that you have that you're particularly excited about?
Oh, all of them. I wouldn't launch them if I wasn't. But the pencil vacuum cleaner. You know, when we did battery sticks, as you might call them, but our format for a vacuum cleaner, as opposed to an upright or canister vacuum cleaner, you know, that was nobody believed in that, and they wouldn't buy it at first. But we thought, you know, with a battery, you don't have a cord, you don't have to keep unplugging it, you don't have this heavy thing, it's very light. But we stuck with that, and it worked. We've now taken that one stage further with our pencil vac, which is because we've been developing these small high-speed motors, we can get the power you need for a vacuum cleaner in a stick. You know, that's pencil vac.
Wow. For everyone who's listening and not seeing this, it's very skinny.
So I'm showing you that both these are 38 millimeters diameter, and that's the hairdryer, which is where I'm actually holding the motor there, and I'm holding the motor here.
Wow. So
it's the thinnest we can get. But, oh, that's what I'm doing. It's the hairdryer. And they're built around this motor.
Holy cow.
So developing the motor enabled us to do a lovely hairdryer, and it enabled us to do a really thin vacuum clean.
That is incredible.
When you've used this, you can't go back to an ordinary. It's so nice and easy to use, and it's, there we are.
We're
striving all the time to make things lighter. Sorry, it blew my pencil off the desk. To make things lighter, make them smaller, make them use fewer materials, just drive everything down to being light, simple, small, and cleverer. That's what we're
doing. Would you say that's an important part for you and for really anyone? As I know, we don't give advice, but you know, you have that sort of guiding principle, like this is the ultimate goal that we're always striving for.
Yes. You have to have a vision about what you want and what you believe people want. And with our light, very light vacuum cleaners, that's not actually what people wanted until people started using it and started to realize you don't need that big heavy machine.
Yeah, right.
That you're pushing around your house with great difficulty. You don't need that.
Yeah.
We're not pushing an open door necessarily when you bring out a new product because people often don't believe it, but they have to see it and try it out.
Wow.
Hear what other people are saying about it. Sorry, the other thing we're doing with our farms is making our own ingredients for our formulations for hair and scalp.
Oh, so really?
This, for example, which we call Amiga, we grow sunflowers for sunflower oil because it's the most important ingredient of we call about 6 or 7 Amiga-rich elements here.
That's going to grow my hair back?
It will indeed. Oh, wow. You must.
Can you ship it over immediately?
You and I must rub it in all the time. So we are starting to use what we grow in Dyson products, which is nice, a nice adjacency.
Yeah. Wow. That's fantastic. Well, you are a very busy man. You've got a lot going on. So why don't we get to the speed round of this conversation? I'm going to ask you just a couple of quick questions. And we'll see what you have to say. Are you ready, Sir James?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
As I ever would be. I've had quite a few cups of coffee, so I'm
far away. All right. Tell us about your workspace. Is it neat and tidy, or are you a mad scientist?
No, it's pretty neat and tidy.
That makes sense.
I'm a designer as well, and I want things to be where they should be. So it's pretty, pretty neat. And I clear it up every evening.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. What is a habit that you are happy to have and one you wish you could get rid of?
The habit, when I see things don't work, that is a habit I wish in a way I could get rid of, because I then start thinking, how can I solve that? So it sets me off on a train of thought, and I wish I could ignore it. So that would be a habit. I think a habit I like is looking for well-designed products, looking for well-designed things. Mm. I like to have those around me. I think some people can put up with things that are not well-designed and not aesthetically pleasing, but I can't.
Okay. Along those lines, is there anything that most people love and you just look at and you're like, ugh, I hate that thing?
Well, it's a funny thing. Sometimes objects that are not aesthetically good looking, but work well, end up pleasing you because they work well. And then you get the same thing in reverse. You get ones that are stylishly designed, but don't work, and you end up hating them. So it's a very complicated relationship. And of course, the ideal is not to have something that's nasty to look at and doesn't work, but to have the opposite.
That's on my resume. Nice to look at, but doesn't work. So what is, you wish you could turn off your brain. Do you have an end of the day ritual, anything that you do at night to turn off your brain, or is it a futile exercise?
It's slightly futile. And as you know, now, we operate all over the world. So someone's working somewhere.
Right.
designing and developing a Dyson or buying a Dyson, thank goodness. So you can't completely turn off, and I never have anyway. But I do relax and have friends and read a book and occasionally watch films. So I do switch off a bit and go for walks. I go running. That helps me to switch off and go for long walks.
So speaking of movies, final question. You have the power to cast someone in the role of you in the Dyson biopic. Who are you casting?
God, I've never been asked that question. That requires an awful lot of thought for some poor person who has to represent me. I don't think I can really answer that question.
Okay, all right. We'll
keep. Anyway, it'll never happen. It'll never happen. So
we'll keep George Clooney's schedule. We'll tentatively put that on his schedule.
He's into coffee, isn't he?
What's that?
He's into coffee, I think.
Yes, he is. He is. Well, Sir James, it's been a delight talking to you, and I have to say a delight using your products. I have many of them in my house, so thank you for that. My wife loves your hair dryers in particular.
Oh, that's great. Thank her very much for being a customer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thank you, and thank you for supporting the cause of entrepreneurs.
Yes, absolutely. So you've got your book, Invention, A Life. Is there any other ways that people can kind of keep up with what you're up to? Are you posting anywhere
yes.
that people can read what you're talking about?
Yes. If you go to the Dyson website, there's a lot there if you dig into it about what we're doing with education, what we're doing with farming. Discover Dyson, it's called, on our website. So it's Dyson on social and Discover Dyson on our website.
Okay, great. And are you posting pictures of what you are eating for lunch that day, or what kinds of things could we see on here?
No, I'm not that sort of poster. No, okay. I keep off it altogether. I just get on with my life, I'm afraid. I don't. But we do show what the kind of things that we are doing that have nothing to do with making vacuum cleaners and hair dryers and so on. So all the non-curriculum stuff is on there.
Excellent. Excellent. And then finally, do you have any homework for someone to do who's listening to this, who always dreamed of creating that product? Is it as simple as write down the thing that's annoying you?
That's a good start. Okay. And build a prototype. Build a prototype. And not just one, but thousands. it doesn't, you don't know the solution when you start, but just start somewhere. And it's funny, once you start, ideas occur and take it from there. But you don't have to have the solution when you start. It occurs and luck happens to you. If you're trying to get there, things will happen accidentally, as it did, it always does with me, which solves the problem. But you can't conceive of that at the beginning. So you start the journey in hope and with determination, but you don't know how you're going to solve it. And you don't even know you're ever going to solve it, actually. So but that's what makes it exciting and interesting.
Ah, that's great. I love it. Well, that's such a great note to end on. So
good.
Thank you so much.